Coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK,
The Lutheran Inquisitor, examining pressing issues and their ramifications for the Church today.
And now, the second half of Lament in the Gospel of Luke, with your host, Pastor John Ehlers.
Hello and welcome to The Lutheran Inquisitor. I'm your host, John Ehlers. I'm pastor of Christ Lutheran Church in Orpington, Kent. I also serve the Reina Mission in Kent down in the Medway Towns and St. Columba Lutheran Church in East Kilbride, Scotland. I'd like to invite you to join us for a service, or if you don't live near us, why not go to our website, lutheran.co.uk, click on the directory button and find the nearest Lutheran congregation to where you live. Go and join them for a worship service. I know that you will be warmly welcomed. I'd also like to encourage you to check out all of our podcasts available on lutheranradio.co.uk. If you've missed an episode of the Lutheran Inquisitor or any of our other programs, go there, check them out, and have a listen. We'd like to thank you as well for your prayers and for your financial support. We are deeply grateful to you for both of those things. Last week, we began our conversation with Dr. Channing Crisler on lament in the Gospel of Luke, and we're going to continue that today. Dr. Crisler is professor of Greek and New Testament at the Champ Divinity School at the Anderson University in South Carolina in the United States. Dr. Crisler, welcome back.
It's great to be back. Thanks for having me again.
It was a really enlightening conversation last week, and I thank you because I learned a ton. We talked last week about lament in the Gospel of Luke, how people came to Jesus to lament, and Jesus as lamenter. Can you just give us a brief summary of what we covered, and then we'll talk about how Jesus taught his disciples to be lamenters?
Sure, absolutely. So, there's a number of places in Luke's Gospel where people come to Jesus, cry out to him. It's this prayer of lament. It really echoes what you see, the way that people pray in the Old Testament. And so, while Luke doesn't often, sort of cite word for word these Old Testament texts, he's using that language, that theology, that idiom, and the way that he describes these encounters that people have with Jesus. A few of the ones that I'll just highlight or recap really quickly again is Luke 8, where the disciples are on the boat on a stormy sea. Jesus is asleep. They wake him, tell him we're perishing, and Jesus commands the storm to be still. I think in that whole episode, Luke's evoking a couple of Psalms of lament, one in particular, Psalm 107, where you actually have the psalmist speaking about fishermen at sea who are caught in a storm, who cry out to God, and God just rebukes the storm and commands it to be still. All those actions, all those events really parallel what we see happening in Luke 8, 22 through 25. And so I don't think that's coincidence. I think that Luke is drawing from that psalm to sort of give a sense of Jesus's identity. And then, of course, the climactic lament to Jesus that I talked about in Luke was the penitent or the lamenting thief in the crucifixion scene in Luke 23, where the thief admits that he's sinful by rebuking the mocking thief. But then he also asked Jesus to remember him in his death. Something that you would only pray to God in the Old Testament, but he directs that request to Jesus. And so I think that says something quite significant about Jesus's identity. And then on the flip side, we have Jesus uttering his own laments. And I mentioned last week that a couple of different times he cries out, laments over Jerusalem, over Israel's rebellion and disbelief in him and the judgment that was going to follow because of that. And in doing that, in crying out, lamenting over Jerusalem, he sounds an awful lot like that weeping prophet Jeremiah, who oftentimes in his work will cry out over Jerusalem as well. So Luke is sort of putting Jesus in that mold of someone who, like a prophet, cries out over those who reject the one whom God sent. But then at the same time, in that, particularly in Luke 13, Jesus sort of takes up the role of God, who wants to protect his people like a hen gathers its brood under its wings. And so, and Jesus sort of using that imagery, he's also evoking some poetic language, even lament language, from the Psalms and Moses' song in Deuteronomy 32. But again, all this really comes to its climactic point again at the crucifixion scene, so that Jesus, here we do have a citation of a lament text from the Old Testament when Jesus says, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit," which is a citation from Psalm 31. And again, if you read the whole context of Psalm 31, what the psalmist is really asking for is to be vindicated before his enemies, he wants his enemies to see that he was who he said he was, that he was in the right before God, to be vindicated in that sense. And of course, that happens emphatically by Jesus being raised from the dead. And one of the things that comes to mind that I didn't mention last week is that when Jesus utters that last word, the centurion there in Luke 23, he says, "Surely this man was dikaios, surely this man was righteous." And if you compare that to what the centurion says in Matthew and in Mark, you know, in Matthew and Mark, he says, "Surely this man was the Son of God." But Luke interprets that as him saying, "Yes, this is the righteous one." And that really falls right in line with what I'm arguing for, and that is that Jesus is this righteous lamenter par excellence. And ironically enough, the only one who really sees it clearly is this Gentile, you know, Roman centurion, and confessing that surely he is the righteous one. And I would just say as a side note that when we talk about the Christological titles of Jesus in the New Testament, I think one of the most neglected ones is that oftentimes Jesus is referred to as the righteous one, both in Luke and in the book of Acts and in 1 John chapter 2. And those titles have a lot of conceptual baggage with them. They tell us a lot about what early Christians thought about Jesus. And so for the centurion to call Jesus the righteous one, I think the explanation of what's meant there is to be traced back to places like the Psalms of Lament, that you see someone who's innocent, you see someone who's suffering unjustly, and yet trusting that God would vindicate them. And that's what happens with Jesus.
Thank you for that wonderful summary. Today we want to talk about Jesus teaching his disciples to be lamenters. We hear Jesus teaching his disciples all kinds of things in Luke, how to pray, the Beatitudes, the parables, but how does he teach them to be lamenters?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I think that it does fall in line with the things you just mentioned that he taught his disciples. And so, you know, if we limit ourselves just to Luke, in Luke chapter 11, of course, the disciples see Jesus praying, and they ask for him to teach them how to pray, and Jesus does. And it's not really there that I see Jesus necessarily teaching the disciples how to lament in the same way that he does. But I think it sort of lays the foundation for it. And then in the other parts of his teaching, Jesus goes on to teach more about prayer, but of course, as he oftentimes does, he does it through parables. And there's two parables in Luke that occur back to back where I think that you really sort of see this come to the surface in terms of Jesus teaching his disciples how to lament. So the first one is in Luke 18, 1 through 8, where you have this widow who comes to an unjust judge, and she comes to him late at night, and he doesn't really want to be bothered, but she is quite persistent. And what she asks for is to be vindicated before her enemies. She wants the judge to decide in her favor. She wants the judge to show that she's in the right and that it's her enemies that are in the wrong. And so, this little parable is nestled between some teaching that Jesus has been giving about his return. And so it's really not just about Jesus teaching his disciples how to pray in the abstract. It's about Jesus teaching his disciples how to pray as they long for his return, which you see him discussing at the end of Luke 17 and the very previous passage. And so it's against that backdrop and with this parable that Jesus, as he oftentimes does, sort of interprets his own parable for the disciples. And he really does this towards the end and about verses 6 and 7. And so he says, for example, in verse 7, "Will not God give justice to his elect who cry out to him day and night? Will he delay long over them?" And that is really the language of lament. Jesus is saying, look, as you look to my return, you need to cry out like this widow, and you need to do it day and night with the expectation that through your persistence and because of God's faithfulness and because he is a righteous judge, unlike the unrighteous judge in the parable, he is going to eventually answer their lament. But of course, Jesus closes that out by giving a warning, and that is that when the Son of Man comes upon the earth, will he find faith upon the earth? In other words, will people be crying out to me in the way that I'm saying that you should in light of this, this widow? And we could really spend the whole time just talking about the way that Jesus uses women, especially in the Gospel of Luke, to sort of be an example of how you cry out and you lament to God. Because there's, we could go back, for example, to Luke 7, the widow, and again, it's a widow, but this time it's the widow at Nain. She only has one son, and now he's died, and she's weeping for him. She's crying out over him. It's a true, genuine funeral lamentation at this point. And Jesus tells her to stop crying, and he raises the son from the dead and gives him back to her. And so I think there's some parallels with that episode and then what he's doing with this widow and this parable in Luke 18. And so I think in a way he's both sort of modeling for the disciples how, you know, real life experiences like this lamenting widow and answering her lament, but then also just in the teaching itself and the explicit teaching of this parable, again, sort of crying out for vindication. Because I think we have to remember that in a first century context, in the Second Temple Jewish context, people had some suspicions about people who were suffering so greatly, right? So a widow with an only son, who's now died, what must she have done to deserve this, right? God must really be angry with her. Or this widow who comes to an unjust judge, you know, how she's breaking all the social norms by coming to him in the dead of night. And yet it's Jesus who points to these kinds of these female lamenters essentially and says, this is how you should be crying out to God, longing for my return. Because when I return, I'm going to raise all of the dead, right? Not just one widow's son, but all of those who cry out to me day and night. So I think that's one, I think, really powerful example of Jesus using this parable to teach his disciples and the readers of Luke and us today how to cry out. And again, this idea of crying out for vindication day and night comes straight from the pages of the Old Testament. So in terms of crying out day and night for vindication, you see this kind of thing going on in Psalm 42, for example. And so that's one that I would mention. But then directly after that, there's another parable that Jesus tells in Luke 18, 9 through 14. And again, it's not just about prayer in the abstract, but prayer in the light of Jesus' return. And specifically, it's a prayer of lament. Only this time, it's a prayer for the forgiveness of sin before God himself. And if you'll recall, we have the Pharisee who, you know, proudly prays to God, thanking God that he's not like all of these other sinful people. He sort of gives a list of all of the righteous deeds that he performs on a daily basis, and he even sort of thumbs down his nose at this tax collector who is also praying. And then Jesus contrasts the Pharisees prayer to God with the tax collector's lament, quite frankly, because as Luke describes the tax collector, he won't even look up to heaven. He beats his chest and he says, Lord, have mercy upon me, a sinner. And we could spend a lot of time talking about that expression, have mercy upon me, which Luke formulates it in a few different ways throughout his gospel, but there are several occasions where people come to Jesus crying out for mercy. And here in this parable, this tax collector is crying out for mercy. And again, Jesus interprets his own parable by saying, you know, truly I say to you that this man went home justified rather than that one. In other words, God answered the lament for being justified before him, not by the one who was proud and self-righteous, but by the one who was quite broken, humble, and like a good lamenter, just begs for God's mercy. And again, all this is against the backdrop of Jesus teaching about his return, that this is how God's people are to pray to him as they await his return. Yes, seeking out vindication before their enemies, that all the world might see that these are God's people because of their faith in Christ, but at the same time realizing their great need for forgiveness before that return. And so to me, these are sort of the two prime examples. Admittedly, there's not as many of these as, say, the laments to Jesus and the laments by Jesus. But I suppose that in a way, even the laments to Jesus and the laments by Jesus are didactic in nature themselves. In other words, they're also teaching people how to lament themselves. But if we're looking for just explicit teaching on prayer of lament by Jesus, then those are the two that I mentioned. But I think at the end of the day, all of it in some way, I think, would qualify as teaching people not just how to lament, but who to cry out to, which would be to cry out to Jesus in the way that you see people doing all throughout the Gospel of Luke.
Well, you mentioned the Gospel of Luke, but that wasn't the only book in the New Testament that Luke wrote. He also wrote the book of Acts. Are there examples there of God's people crying out to him or to Jesus for deliverance? Do we see that spilling over after the resurrection and ascension of Jesus?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great place to go, because where you really see this is in Acts chapter 7, with oftentimes referred to as the martyrdom of Stephen, where Stephen is stoned to death. And I think that you do see here, I think it's the prime example of what Luke was aiming for in terms of teaching people who to cry out to, who to lament to, and how to do it. And of course, all of that revolves around Jesus. And so in Acts chapter 7, Stephen gives a very long sermon, and the crux of that sermon is that Israel was constantly rejecting those whom God sent to save them, to vindicate them. There was this constant rejection of the messenger, and so, you know, he talks about Moses and the prophets and a number of figures from the Old Testament. And then I oftentimes tell students Stephen has to embody his own sermon, because after acknowledging that they've rejected Jesus, then they also reject a messenger of Jesus who is Stephen, and they stone him to death. And it's really at this moment that I think that we see this prime example of being a Christian lamenter, if you will. Because Stephen does two things that we see related to Jesus and the Gospel of Luke. And so one thing that he does there is, actually we see about three things. One is he says that he can see the heavens opened and Jesus standing at God's right hand. And, he sees Jesus as the one who is going to deliver him even in the face of death. And of course, commentators have wrestled for decades on why does Luke portray Jesus as standing up? Because all throughout the New Testament, Jesus is sitting at the right hand of the Father. Why, though, does he this is the only instance in which a New Testament writer describes Jesus as standing next to the right hand of the Father. And there's lots of theories as to explain why he's standing, but and I'll go ahead and throw my ring in the hat, and that is that I think that what Luke is doing is that oftentimes in the Psalms of Lament, the request that the lamenter makes is for God to stand and save. And I think that Jesus is standing to save Stephen. And as you move on to the end of Acts chapter 7, Stephen prays two things. One, he asks that Jesus would forgive those who are stoning him. Well, when we look back in the Gospel of Luke, we see Jesus doing the same thing, asking for God's forgiveness of those who are crucifying him. And so here is, Jesus was an intercessory lamenter. Stephen is now doing the same thing for his own enemies. And I think that I'd be remiss if I didn't remind us all that one of the people that's standing there, of course, is Saul of Tarsus, or Paul of Tarsus, that he's holding the garments of those who are stoning Stephen to death. And in other words, Stephen is asking for the forgiveness of those who are stoning him, including Paul. And then what do we see just a few chapters later? God actually answers that prayer, because he calls Paul on the road to Damascus. But that's a story for another time, I suppose. But it does demonstrate sort of Stephen acting as an intercessory lamenter. So in that way, he's imitating the laments that are made by Jesus in the Gospel of Luke, that Jesus oftentimes cries out to God on behalf of other people, like weeping over Jerusalem and so forth. And so Stephen is doing that. And again, like Jesus, it takes place at the most climactic moment, right? At the moment of death. But also, what's really interesting as well is that Stephen laments to Jesus, because he doesn't say, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." Instead, he says, "Lord Jesus, into your hands I commit my spirit." And so he's using that same line that Jesus did, only now, in Acts 7:59, he says, "Lord Jesus, receive my spirit." He doesn't say, "Father, receive my spirit." He directs that cry to Jesus. And so I think that this really embodies all that Luke was doing with lament in the Gospel of Luke, that here you have Stephen in his own martyrdom, both lamenting to Jesus, but also lamenting like Jesus. And I don't think it's a coincidence that just as this came to a climactic point in the crucifixion of Jesus, in other words, we learn the most about Jesus in his death and in his resurrection. And something similar, I think, is happening with Stephen. We learn the most about what it means to be this disciple who laments to Jesus and like Jesus at the moment of death. And so, yeah, I think that's where I would really see this sort of taking shape in the book of Acts.
Dr. Crisler, thank you for that very interesting explanation. But let's try and put the rubber to the road.
Sure, sure.
Stephen is a great saint. Jesus was Son of God.
Yes.
God with us, Emmanuel. How does lament hit us in the church today? I mean, so often we hear we should be joyful and happy, almost never hear anything about lament. And in fact, we think lament is a sign of weakness. How would you encourage us through the scriptures to be a church that actually pays attention to lament and maybe even puts it into practice? And how would that help and strengthen and deepen our discipleship with Christ?
Yeah, I think it's a great question, and I think from a scriptural standpoint, if we let scripture sort of guide us in the way that we and the way that we approach God, which obviously we should. And when it comes to this subject of lament, if we were to take our cues from Luke, the Gospel of Luke, for example, I think that it's important to remember that, that the examples that Luke gives of people crying out to Jesus, are not just to sort of give us a memory of who Jesus was, but of who he is. That you can still cry out to Jesus in the way that Peter did, or the way that the widow of Nain did, or like the penitent thief at the cross. In other words, no matter who you are, right? Peter, widow, a thief, no matter when God calls you to do something, when you've lost something like that widow, or at the moment of death. So no matter who you are, no matter what the circumstances are, no matter when you find yourself afflicted, Luke assures us, right? He gives us certainty that you can lament, you can cry out to Jesus, and he will answer. And we know that he will answer because God has answered him. God has raised him from the dead. He is seated at God's right hand, or maybe even standing in certain moments at God's right hand. And so these are not memories of Jesus answering lament. These are living, it's a living testimony that this is who Jesus is. And so it doesn't matter who you are, it doesn't matter what you've done, what you're trying to do, where you're going, what circumstances that you find yourself in. Jesus answers the laments of everybody in Luke. In fact, the only people that he doesn't answer in the Gospel of Luke are those who don't approach him in humility and who approach him with self-assurance, who approach him as if all is well. Jesus actually doesn't answer those types of people in the Gospel of Luke. So again, like that parable in Luke 8, 9 through 14. And I think that that's just rather refreshing, that when I come to Jesus, I don't have to come to him, just bursting with joy, bursting with self-assurance, with no care in the world, that instead, those whom he really answers and seeks are those who come to him in brokenness, those who come to him in desperation. To use a lament of from a very well-known psalm, Psalm 50:51. You know, it's a broken and contrite spirit that God responds to. That's what we see Jesus responding to in the Gospel of Luke. And so, again, I think that read the Gospel of Luke, see yourself in these different people who cry out to Jesus, and see Jesus's response to them as his response to you. I think that's one powerful way that we can sort of experience this and practice this as Christians today.
Dr. Krizler, thank you for your wonderful insights, for your encouragement for us to lament before God and to seek his mercy in Jesus Christ. We look forward to your book, and again, we highly recommend your other book, Reading Romans as Lament. And again, thank you so much for being our guest.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening to The Lutheran Inquisitor with Pastor John Ehlers. If you have any questions or comments about the issues raised in this program, send an email to info@lutheranradio.co.uk. The podcast of this show is available from our website. Check our program online and stay tuned.